Blog Talk Radio.
Former Blackhawk, local guy, and the current color analyst for the Blackhawks on television, it is Eddie Olczyk.
The guy's an asshole.
Dead air moments. Paid out the rectum.
Well, first of all, we're very, very happy with Dennis Savard as our head coach. He's growing.
What the fuck does that mean? I don't know how long you guys got, but I can sit. I'll sit here till 4 in the morning and explain to you why James Wisniewski sucks.
You're never surprised by anything.
What is slashing?
Slashing is like death.
Mm-hmm. And there's a penalty for that.
Yeah. And for a trip also, you know,
oh.
Like that, and
mm-hmm.
for hook, like this, and for spear, you know, like that,
mm-hmm.
all bad.
Bad.
You do that, you go to the box, you know, 2 minutes by yourself, and you feel shame, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then you get free.
All right, it is the Third Man In Radio. It is Chris Block, the writer, editor, and keeper of the thirdmanin.com, and alongside is my co-host, as usual, per usual, the superstar. How are you doing tonight, superstar?
I am well, and yourself?
Pretty good, pretty well. You're inside a month now, superstar, from being fenced in from your freedom.
I am. Actually, 27 days, 26 days? It's close. Even my mother commented to me that the countdown is on.
Yeah, and also the countdown is down to the 2010-11 NHL season. It is about 29 days now until puck drop.
Coming up quick, isn't it?
We're inside 2 weeks till camps report, and about 29 days till the first official puck drop. And a few more days than that, the banner will raise at the United Center. The Blackhawks will hopefully, you know, it's interesting. The question I got this question many times, and I believe our guest's on the line. We're going to get to him in just a moment. But I got this question, I don't know about you. I'm getting it more and more now that we're into September, but people are asking me all weekend long, when are the Blackhawks going to put the Stanley Cup away already? It's been everywhere.
It's been everywhere.
Chicago. Yeah. I think people are getting a little
sick. Why put it away? Well, yeah, I think to the casual fan, it may have just come around, and there's a lot of them, as you know. I can see how it's a little overbearing, over intoxicating, so to speak, opposed to somebody like yourself or myself, who's waited a good time for this, that, you know, I'm a little more tolerant, I think, than most people.
As opposed to two people such as ourselves that are never over intoxicated.
Never.
Not even this past Saturday night.
No.
Or Sunday night. Long weekends get to us. Also, and I want to go over to our guest. One of the teams that I think more so than anybody, and a fandom that is more excited or has as much to be excited about this upcoming season is the Los Angeles Kings. And on the line now, writer over at mayorsmanor.com, we have the mayor on the line, I believe. Mayor, are you there?
I am here. Thanks for having me, guys.
No problem. Let's talk about first your website, mayorsmanor.com, for everybody that wants to check it out. When we post the show up on the website, we'll put the link to it and everything. But tell us how you came to be writing about the LA Kings and how the website came about.
Well, I've been following the Kings now for about 20 years, seen them play in just about every NHL arena, been to several different Olympics, and somebody just basically said to me a couple years ago, hey, why don't you start writing about them? And I did, and through some connections with some players and whatnot, got a lot of interviews up there. had, you know, everybody from Hall of Famers through prospects, and it just kind of snowballed from there. So it's been great, and, yeah, we encourage people to go and check it out, mayorsmanor.com, or follow me on Twitter for, you know, funny comments at twitter.com/mayor119.
All right. I guess to get started, let's recap for our fans the 2009-10 season for the LA Kings. Finally, you know, it hasn't been too long, but the LA Kings back in the playoffs. The first round matchup with the Vancouver Canucks, a great, one of the best series of the entire playoff last year, or in the spring anyhow. I mean, what was the consensus coming out of the playoff? Where does this team stand after last season, the LA Kings?
Yeah, you know, it was about time. It had been 7 or 8 years since the Kings had made it back to the playoffs, and basically they had stripped the team down, and general manager Dean Lombardi had built it from the ground back up, and through the use of some draft picks that were, you know, honestly there before he got there, but also through his addition of some other players, they built the team back up and had a tremendous year, you know, posted over 100 points. In terms of the playoffs, they came into the playoffs pretty tired, especially in goal, you know, in goal. They relied very heavily on Jonathan Quick throughout the season, and some would say that he didn't play up to his best, you know, in the playoffs. His numbers were certainly down. He went from about a 2.5 goals against up to about 3.5. Save percentage was off a little bit as well. It was a great series, like you said. You know, the Kings took the split and the opening two games in Vancouver, and the series probably, if you had to pin it on one thing, came down to Game 4 when Frolov came down and missed one-on-one with Luongo, and that kind of turned the series around. All the momentum from that point forward really was in favor of Vancouver, but I'm sure the players would tell you that, you know, a six-game series doesn't really come down to one play, but if you had to pick one, that's probably what it was.
Another big thing that the Kings were missing in towards the latter half of that series, the deadline acquisition, Justin Williams. A key component of that, a team. I mean, taking him out of the lineup, would that have changed the outcome of the series at all, do you think?
Well, yeah, certainly there's been some grumblings that he wasn't too happy about being benched in that series. He wasn't playing, you know, the same way that he was playing in the first half. The acquisition of him was a gamble to begin with, given his injury history. But there's no arguing that the first half of the year that they were the best, his line along with Ryan Smith and Kopitar, they were the best line in hockey. And then you had a couple injuries in the December time frame, and they really never seemed to get rolling again in the second half of the year, especially like they were in the first half.
Now, you mentioned Jonathan Quick, and I think one of the most interesting aspects of this Los Angeles Kings team is it's been on the upswing, and I think everybody – I kind of expect, I mean, you're talking about a team in the LA Kings that only won six fewer games than the Chicago Blackhawks last year. They finished with 101 points. It's only good enough to get them sixth in the conference, but still 101 points, that's pretty impressive. Now there's this expectation that the Kings are going to take another step. One of the things that is the most interesting, I think, about this team, you know, in their future is you have a team that has their 06, their 07, their 08, and their 09 first-round picks yet to make this team and you know, make any sort of an impact. One of those guys, your 2006 first-rounder, Jonathan Bernier, fantastic season last year in Manchester, an even better playoff, just dominating in the playoff for Manchester. Jonathan Quick, you said, well, he may have not lived up to expectations or at least, you know, what he put up in the first half of last season, but where is that goaltending situation standing at right now? Jonathan Quick, it looked like, could be a workhorse, fantastic, as we said in the first half, but now you've got this young kid who's expected to be a franchise goaltender and Jonathan Bernier. Like, where do they sit right now in terms of in net?
Yeah, the battle in net is really one of the most intriguing things as we get ready for camp to open up here in about a week or so. Publicly, the Kings are saying it's Jonathan Quick's job to lose and you know, it's Bernier's job to take, and if things worked out as they would like, you'd probably see Bernier play somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, maybe 20 to 25 games this year. Certainly Quick cannot play as many games as he did last year if this team expects to go deep in the playoffs and challenge Chicago and San Jose and some of those elite teams in the West that you mentioned. In terms of Bernier, you know, all-world goalie up until this point, like you talked about. Great numbers in Manchester. At the end of the day, though, he still is a goalie that has three you know, NHL games. It's not a lot of experience, and some people were pushing this summer for the Kings to trade one of those goalies. In typical Dean Lombardi fashion, at least up until the time of this taping right now, it hasn't happened. He's held on to those two assets, and if he would have, in my opinion, it would have been a year too early. You probably need to let that thing play out this year, and you know, maybe at the trading deadline at the earliest you could see one of those guys moving, but it really would be nice to see both of those guys in Los Angeles this year, and the cream will rise to the top, and I don't think there's one team in the National Hockey League that will tell you they have too much goaltending. So the Kings are in a good position from that standpoint.
Obviously, and you take a look at what happened with the Blackhawks last year. You can't count the second dog out of the race. And, you know, regardless of experience, Antti Niemi, you know, rose to the top and in the end was the hero, or one of the heroes in the Blackhawks' ascension to a Stanley Cup. With Jonathan Bernier, he's got quite the history, though. I mean, this is a kid that 3 years ago pouted his way out of a starting job on the World Junior Championship team with Canada in the year that Steve Mason ascended to an early superstardom anyhow. I mean, how is this feeling about, take last year's season aside, I mean, let's maybe take a step back to before last season. A year ago, where did Bernier stand, and is that something that maybe you think Dean Lombardi still has in the back of his mind, like, can he trust Bernier? Is Bernier mentally strong enough to be the man at this level?
Well, publicly at least, Dean Lombardi, as well as his assistant general manager, Ron Hextall, who also serves as the general manager in Manchester, in the AHL, they both would tell you that they absolutely have full confidence in Jonathan Bernier. They've been very open, especially with their fan base, about the challenges that they've experienced with Bernier. You talked about, you know, the pouting and the sulking. The Kings organization went through that as well when he was sent down after his original stay with the team when they went over to London to play the Ducks a couple of seasons ago. He wasn't happy about going back to Manchester. They had a tough year with him that year. But you know, from the very beginning, Dean Lombardi has been insistent upon the fact that his high-end prospects learn how to be pros. And you know, they go to the AHL, they ride the buses, they do the things that they need to do to appreciate playing in the NHL. And Jonathan Bernier, from all signs, you know, from all indications, it appears he got the message loud and clear. He came back with a great year this past season. And like I said, Hextall and Lombardi both say that, you know, he's learned from the experience, he's grown from the experience, and they have all the confidence in the world. So I guess we'll really see this year. Bernier does come in with a clearly defined role. He's the backup in Los Angeles. Jonathan Quick is the starter, and we'll see if he uses that as motivation or if 10 or 20 games into the season it becomes a problem.
Is there anything to indicate outside of course, what the team is willing to say publicly and willing to put out there? Is there any indication about what type of a kid that this guy is? Is this Bernier? Is there a feeling of entitlement there? Or is this a kid that has got the message and is willing to, you know, earn his stripes, so to speak?
Well, if there was a feeling of entitlement, which certainly a lot of players that are taken, especially early in the draft, can have at times, you know, in many different organizations, if there was that feeling, he's beyond it now. In talking with his teammates, I just spoke with Corey Elkins, one of his teammates, the other day. He raved about Bernier as a goaltender last year and the leadership that he brought to the team. So he really seems to have gotten the message, I think that really what probably has helped him is that the message has been consistent with throughout the organization. It's not just a message to Jonathan Bernier. It's a message to every player, to every draft pick, to you know, have high character and to want to be a professional and all those things that are necessary to be good players, you know, off the ice in the NHL. So with that message being consistent throughout the organization at all levels, I think Bernier has not only heard it for himself, but his teammates have heard it, and so it starts to resonate with everybody, not just one single player.
What about Quick? Jonathan Quick, I mean, there's a great story there in that he was brought up to the NHL because of goaltending injury issues. He's brought up from Reading in the ECHL just a few years ago. He was, you know, toiling between the AHL and the ECHL, and all of a sudden he comes up and he does the job for the Kings. He sticks around. Obviously, it takes, you know, quite a bit of you know, emotional and mental stability to be able to handle that kind of pressure. Is there I mean, we kind of talked about it, but long term, do you see this as a guy that, okay, he came to the NHL level and he played a full season that finally last year he played 72 games. 72 games is a lot of games for a goaltender. I mean, even Marty Brodeur, that's a lot of games for a goalie. Is this, you know, Jonathan Quick versus Bernier, what are the differences, sort of, I guess is where I'm going with this. What are the differences in styles of goaltenders and ability to hold up over a season?
Yeah, well, we haven't seen a lot of Bernier in Los Angeles, so anything that I would comment about him would purely be off of a few games we've seen in L.A. and you know, maybe a couple of games that Manchester has, you know, had on the NHL Network or whatnot, or things that have been written by other people. In terms of Jonathan Quick, what I can tell you is an interesting story from Carl Taylor, who's the coach of the Ontario Reign, which is the affiliate team of the Kings in the ECHL, who had him there in Reading that you mentioned. And coming into last season, I was speaking with Carl Taylor, and we were talking about some of the goaltending depth that was in the organization. Obviously, all the hype was on Bernier. They also had Zatkoff there in Ontario. And he said, you know, don't forget about Jonathan Quick. And he was really quick to point out that he had a lot of praise for Jonathan Quick, loved his character, loved his makeup, loved how hard he competed, especially, you know, in practice and his game preparation, and was quick to point out that he shared all those comments with Ron Hextall, you know, coming into last year. So when I spoke with him later in the year, as Ontario was battling for the playoffs there in the ECHL, he you know, was, again, quick to point out that he still believes in Jonathan Quick and that his success in Los Angeles last year didn't surprise him at all. In terms of the mental makeup, he actually believes that having Bernier, you know, in town, in Los Angeles, to push and challenge him this year will actually make Jonathan Quick that much better. There are some people that could make the argument that, you know, Jonathan Quick perhaps was a little bit too comfortable in goal in the second half of the year and wasn't pushing as hard as he was in the first half of the year. I don't know if that's necessarily true. There might have been other factors, other things going on off the ice, but certainly his play in the second half when he was the number one guy in getting, you know, the overwhelming majority of the starts, he was not playing the same way he was playing in the first half, probably maybe or possibly more motivated.
What about Eric Ehresburg? I mean, outside of, you know, a brief audition in 2008, he really hasn't had that great of numbers. Where does Eric Ehresburg stand in the organization right now?
Yeah, I don't see him being a part of the Kings, you know, moving forward. There's really not a place for him. There certainly is not a place for him in Los Angeles when you all but, you know, have guaranteed that it's going to be Quick and Bernier in L.A. Over in Manchester, you have Zatkoff that I mentioned a moment ago. He was the understudy to Bernier last year, coming off some solid seasons in Ontario in the ECHL. And right behind him, you have Martin Jones from the Calgary Hitmen, you know, top goaltender in the Western Hockey League. You know, where does Ehresburg fit in? Could he play in Manchester? Yeah, possibly, but more than likely he's ticketed back to Europe this year would be my best guess.
Let's talk about the Los Angeles Kings off season, the summer of which, you know, going into the off season, the LA Kings, and they were a player in the Ilya Kovalchuk sweepstakes, but that was the expectation that it was going to be, whatever it came down to, whether they got him or not, that they were going to be in that sweepstakes. They were. It ended up being too much, evidently. And they settled for Alexei Ponikarovsky. How do you rate the off season? There have been the departures on defense, Randy Jones up front, Froloff, Fredrik Modin, also Jeff Halpern, Sean O'Donnell also leaving on defense. How do you rate the LA Kings in terms of the turnover and what they brought in?
Well, two things. One, I would say that it's probably a B. You know, maybe a B minus, but in terms of settling for Ponikarovsky, they're two unrelated things. They both happen to be forwards, but they're two completely unrelated things. The pursuit of Kovalchuk was a front line. You know, you're talking one of the highest goal scorers in the National Hockey League. He's a guy that would have played on the number one line. Ponikarovsky, Pony Boy, as I call him, is really a replacement for Alexander Froloff, who played the bulk of last year on the third line. If you look at Pony's numbers over the last 5 years, they're very comparable to Froloff, almost identical, in fact. You know, Pony's 2 years older, maybe a little bit stronger defensively. I guess time will tell. That's what some reports have indicated. But that's really a depth move. That was not the move. the move would have been signing Kovalchuk. And so from that standpoint, the Kings did not make the move, a big over-the-top move, the single player that was gonna propel them into, you know, the number one position in the Western Conference. That being said, Dean Lombardi said before last season that each player, especially the younger players, and he was looking squarely at Dustin Brown and Kopitar and Doughty and Wayne Simmonds, that those guys have to get better, and that's ultimately for this team to reach the success that he desires for the team, those guys have to get better. And that's absolutely what needs to happen this year as well. The big questions coming into this season would be, you know, who's going to play number two center? They probably have a pair of number three centers in Jarrett Stoll and Michael Hanzus. But at this point, you know, the players that departed, the Randy Jones, the Modines of the world, they really weren't adding a tremendous amount to the team. They're role players, and they'll be replaced by other role players. If you figure that Willie Mitchell is a replacement for Sean O'Donnell, that's probably a pretty good trade. And if you figure that Pony replaces Frolov, that's at least an even trade. So this team on paper still looks good going into next year. There are a couple holes and question marks, but everything looks good heading into the season. So from that standpoint, I'd say it's probably a B.
Still, we're talking about the L.A. market, and, you know, they're fighting for, you know, attention with the Los Angeles Lakers. Probably two different demographics and audiences, but rate the level of disappointment in that it was teased so much and for the Kings and Dean Lombardi not to come away with a dynamic player like Kovalchuk.
Yeah, it's a great question that you probably have to answer from a couple different perspectives. For the average sports fan in Los Angeles, it probably didn't even register. The Kings are still growing in terms of, you know, their fan base. This city was electric for hockey back in the, you know, early 90s when Gretzky was here and the team made a run to the Stanley Cup Finals in 1993. Having not been to the playoffs for 7 or 8 years, some of the, you know, excitement and hoopla and attention in Los Angeles had certainly dissipated, especially when you consider the success of the Lakers, like you mentioned, and with, you know, Manny Ramirez coming to Los Angeles and really electrifying this city. That being said, as you got into the second half of last year and the Kings were making a run there and then ultimately made the playoffs, the city was, you know, excited. In terms of Kovalchuk, though, people probably, you know, really weren't too aware of what was going on. The flip side of that would have been, you know, for every 10 people that were probably disappointed that he didn't come here, there probably would have been 100 people that would have been excited if he had signed here because of the splash that would have made. So, you know, if a tree falls in the forest, does somebody hear it? You know, it's kind of something to think about there. I guess that's probably the best way to answer the question.
You know, I read in, you know, I keep up on the league in general, and I'd read many times Dean Lombardi had said that he wasn't going to pursue, and maybe through intermediaries, maybe not publicly he said this, but he wasn't going to pursue or overextend himself on someone like Ilya Kovalchuk at the risk of losing some of his core players like Doughty, Simmonds, Brown, Kopitar. At the end of the day, I mean, how far do you think he was off from what Kovalchuk ended up getting in New Jersey?
There have been various reports between, you know, 60 and 80 million is kind of the Kings' window that they were looking at. He went for 15 years at 100 million. Dean wasn't willing to go that far. The names you mentioned, Brownie, you know, Dustin Brown is under contract for a number of years at a very reasonable rate, but Drew Doughty does need to be signed. Jack Johnson does need to be signed. Wayne Simmonds will be doing extension as well. So there are a lot of players, you know, in the system that are going to need to be paid over the next couple of years. And, yeah, the Kings really can't afford to, and I don't mean financially, but they can't afford to overextend themselves from a cap perspective and be locked into one player. We talked a moment ago about, you know, kind of the media reaction and whether the fans were or weren't excited. The other thing to keep in mind is there was a significant percentage of the fan base that didn't want Kovalchuk to come here. That even if you were able to get them to admit that he was a dynamic player that could put up a lot of points, you know, what, since the lockout, third most goals in the league, you know, Ovechkin obviously being first, I think Kovalchuk was third. But they didn't want the Kings to do just that. They didn't want Lombardi to overextend himself and put himself in a position where a guy like Drew Doughty can't get signed or a guy like Jack Johnson can't get signed. So Lombardi, he's really done a great job of educating the fan base over the last few years. He's been very open, very transparent. As a matter of fact, this Saturday morning around 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, he'll be having an open forum with 3,000 Kings fans at their training facility, and I'm sure Kovalchuk and the pursuit of Kovalchuk will be a hot topic once again. But Dean will answer all questions and let everybody know exactly what he was thinking.
Taking a look at CapGeek.com today, the LA Kings with 20 people, according to CapGeek's tracker, got 20 guys under contract and a little bit over $9 million in cap space. So obviously, had they wanted to go that extra mile to go with a guy like Kovalchuk, they could have done it. But obviously, long-term planning fits in there. Two guys I want to talk to you about. One you mentioned and one that you, I don't believe you, one of the guys that on the defense that was just re-signed is a guy, Matt Green. Big guy, rugged defenseman on the blue line. His ascension, really, from being a borderline scratch guy to a solid 5-6, up to now, which is what he is a fourth defenseman, Matt Green. Talk a little bit about this guy. I think he's an interesting character, 27 years old, came from the Edmonton organization. What can Blackhawks fans look for when they see the LA Kings come into town here in the end of October?
Yeah, Matt Green has certainly improved his game each year over the last couple of years. When he came over from Edmonton, I think there were some Kings fans that didn't know what they were getting in a Matt Green. He was a guy who just, 2 years before the trade, he was splitting time between the AHL and the Oilers, and he had come off an injury in the 07-08 season. But the last 2 years in Los Angeles, he's played almost a full season each year. He played 82 games the first year and I think 75 games last year, chipping in a couple goals each year. But his toughness has really come out over the last, year plus. This guy's a warrior, and it's not surprising that he's wearing the A in Los Angeles. And there were many games where the Kings relied upon and needed his toughness last season, and they're going to be without him to start the season. He had a back injury or shoulder injury that'll prevent him from playing the first part of the season, but he should be back probably about a month into the season.
And along those same lines, Willie Mitchell, an interesting signing that, I don't know about you, but I thought that the number that he came in at was kind of peculiar. Willie Mitchell signing for 2 years, $3.5 million a year. At least is what his cap hit averages out at. Obviously, a solid defender for the Vancouver Canucks. Did not play much of the last half of last season with concussion-like syndromes. What are you hearing right now about Willie Mitchell?
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of positive things. People are excited about the fact that Willie Mitchell is coming here. Some people are a little bit nervous coming off the concussion history, especially with history of concussion prone players in Los Angeles, whether you're talking about an Adam Deadmarsh or Jason Allison, from 7-8 years ago. But Willie Mitchell, by all signs, is cleared and has been ready to go. In terms of the contract, supposedly the Kings were the team that was willing to go a second year, where most other teams were looking to be a little bit more cautious and go with just a one-year deal. There was some cap or is some cap room in Los Angeles for that second year. It's not too big of a risk. If you wanted a 4 or 5 year deal, it probably wouldn't work. So, back to the Matt Green injury as well. On the defense, they needed to short things up a little bit with Green being out. Of course, you have Doughty and Johnson. You lost Sean O'Donnell. Is Randy Jones, a loss? Not taking anything away from him. He put some points up offensively for the Kings, but appeared to be a defensive liability at times. So the signing of Willie Mitchell is being well-received for the most part in Los Angeles, and if he plays like he's capable of playing and like he played, prior to concussions, I think that the fans in Los Angeles will fall in love with Willie Mitchell very quickly. And from that standpoint, also, I'd say look at the Kings, top five defensemen. It'd have to rank right up there with the elite teams in the Western Conference.
But with the injury to Green and we'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but there is some uncertainty there with Willie Mitchell. The Kings have been drafting high-end defensemen for a while now. We've yet to see a few of them. Thomas Hickey, Colton Tubert. Those guys are actually defensive partners a couple years ago at the World Juniors. When can we expect to see some of these guys get into the lineup? I know Thomas Hickey may be on track to be there this year. I mean, what are the expectations out of some of these defensemen that are coming up?
Yeah, it's a great question. Defense has certainly is where a lot of the depth is in the organization. In terms of Tubert, you know, just to kind of pick them off one by one, Tubert has a wrist injury. He won't be ready to start the season. He had a great year last year in the WHL, playing for the Regina Pats. He had his best offensive year. He was taken in the first round back in 08, but he'll be hurt. Thomas Hickey, who was taken in the first round the year before him, had an injury at the second half of last season there with Manchester, his first year in the AHL. Supposedly he'll be back. He's healthy, ready to go. We'll get a long look at him in camp. He'll start the rookie development camp, I believe, next week. there's a couple other kids. There's a Russian kid prospect, Voinov. He was being mentored by Igor Larionov, who's his father played with Larionov. There's been some talk that he might be going back to Russia if he doesn't make it to the NHL this year, but I'm not sure if that's really the case. He's another kid that's injured, has a shoulder injury, so we'll see where things end up with him. He'll probably more than likely end up starting the year in Manchester because he won't be able to compete for a spot in Los Angeles. There's another kid, though, who doesn't get mentioned a lot, who, in my opinion, might be one of the dark horses in the group. That's Nicholas Delorier. He's been in a few of the rookie camps, the development camps here in Los Angeles the last couple years after being drafted in the third round of 2009. He's a young kid. He's 19 years old. He plays in the Quebec Junior League. But he looks absolutely phenomenal, has looked phenomenal in the two camps that he's been at here in Los Angeles. Just great hockey sense, great moves, super fast. And he came over, the Kings acquired him via a trade they made with the Dallas Stars in 2007 when they traded away their captain, Mattias Nordström. That was Johan Franzen. I'm sorry, Delorier was drafted. But just a real solid solid guy. And I'm excited to see him back in camp. And then I mentioned the trade for Nordström. Johan Franzen is a kid that was over in the Swedish Elite League, and they'll get a look at him in camp this year as well. So several prospects. Who's going to make it first? At this point, probably Thomas Hickey would be the guy that would make it first. More than anything else, I would think, probably just because of injuries.
Mm-hmm. What about these other guys? Peter Harold, Alec Martinez. I mean, are these just stopgaps, or can we expect to see anything from these guys long term?
No, Alec Martinez has played a little bit. He got a sniff. Peter Harold, not really sure where he fits in. He played about half a season in L.A. last year after playing almost a full year here in L.A. the year before.
It was 2 seasons ago. He was getting some time at forward too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's more of a utility guy. Harold can play forward, he can play defense. He played at Boston College, and that's really the interesting thing that I think kind of flies under the radar for a lot of people is how many college defensemen the Kings have. We talked about Matt Green earlier. He played at North Dakota. Peter Harold from Boston College. There's Davis Drewiski from University of Wisconsin. Jack Johnson from Michigan. So there's a number of college defensemen. So for all the hoopla and attention about Dean Lombardi loving kids from the Western Hockey League at the NHL level, the Kings have quite a few college players. Alec Martinez might get a look this year as well. Any one of those guys could end up as the sixth defenseman this year.
Yeah, Martinez is probably the most solid guy at Manchester last year. You mentioned a guy though. I want to talk to you about this because. Jack Johnson, it seems like every time there's a trade rumor involving the Los Angeles Kings, that's the name that's mentioned, Jack Johnson. The Kings this year, final year of deals for a lot of key young players. Wayne Simmons, who I want to talk about a little bit later on, Brad Richardson, Drew Doughty, and Jack Johnson. What is the outlook for Jack Johnson, considering all these guys that we just talked about and that are coming up through the system? What is the outlook? Where is the commitment level from Dean Lombardi to Jack Johnson going forward?
Well, Dean Lombardi is a big Jack Johnson guy. At least that's what he'll tell you. There was that little rift earlier last year after an article came out where Lombardi had some things to say about Michigan and Jack's development there, and supposedly Jack and Dean got together soon after that and ironed things out. Dean was very quick to praise Jack's play in the second half of the year. You know, Jack Johnson was part of Team USA as well, and you'd have to figure that Dean Lombardi, as one of the assistant GMs or the advisors to Brian Burke to pick the Olympic hockey team, certainly was lobbying for Jack Johnson. So to think that Dean Lombardi is not high on Jack Johnson, I think, would be a mistake. A lot of the Kings' marketing this upcoming season is based around four players, at least the marketing materials that have come out so far: Kopitar, Brown, Johnson, and Doughty. So, you know, from that standpoint, the team looks like that they believe in Jack Johnson. Why does his name come up? You know, he's a young player who people are going to think that maybe he's the guy that has to leave. If you have to give up something to get something, who's somebody that possibly the Kings would be willing to trade? Wayne Simmons is another guy that comes up in trade rumors, who, a lot like Jack Johnson, I think the fans would be extremely upset if they traded him. And a certain segment of the population would be surprised if they traded him. Dustin Brown's name has come up, but, you know, that's because he has such an affordable and such a wonderful contract for the next couple years. So who wouldn't want, you know, the L.A. Kings captain, a guy that leads the league or is near the top of the league every year and hits, who has such an affordable contract? Probably 29 other teams around the league would love to get their hands on that contract. But I'd be surprised to see Jack, Simmons, or Brown move anytime soon. For a guy like Jack Johnson to get traded, the Kings are going to have to get a real frontline, you know, top of the food chain forward in return.
Yeah, I think anytime that, for everybody listening, I think anytime that you hear names like Jack Johnson, Dustin Brown's not going anywhere, but Wayne Simmons, any guy like that from, you know, specifically we're talking about the LA Kings, you're talking about players, and just to throw out a name that, a guy who has an expiring contract, Alexander Semin in Washington. I mean, you're talking about the top-of-the-line guys, because these are players. Jack Johnson projects to be a first or second defenseman for any franchise in the league for the next 7 to 10 years. Wayne Simmons, I think, is the next-generation athlete. He just keeps getting better and better every single year. He's becoming a scorer now, which is something that we didn't see in his younger years in the league. In his development coming up through the Canadian system. But, yeah, you're looking at, if it doesn't involve those kind of names, I don't think there's any merit to it.
Yeah,
and
you know, Marty
would be insane to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there is an old saying, you have to give something to get something. So if the Kings are looking to make a trade and they want to make a big splash, those are some of the names that might be included in a deal like that. But Jack Johnson's not going anywhere for a rental player. Jack Johnson, if he was to be traded, and again, I don't think he is, but if he was to be traded, it'd have to be a frontline player that's going to be in Los Angeles for many years to come, and more than likely would put them over the top in terms of being a Stanley Cup contender, because from day one, Dean Lombardi has talked about wanting to build a team from the net out. He has the goaltending depth. He's building, you know, the defensive depth. We talk about the fact that he has a lot of first and second round, you know, prospects. But at the NHL level, you're talking about Drew Doughty and Jack Johnson. So, don't really see him going somewhere. But, you know, hey, Wayne Gretzky was traded, so every player can be traded, right?
Speaking, you're right. Speaking specifically of Johnson, I wanted to ask you this, and forgive me if I missed this over the course of the season, but Rob Blake just retired.
Uh-huh.
And the Los Angeles Kings, they have a history of bringing players back into the fold and into some kind of capacity on the hockey operations or the front office side. Has there been any talk about Rob Blake? And Rob Blake, I mean, mentored, and Jack Johnson lived with him his first year in the league. Is there any talk at all about bringing Rob Blake back into the fold?
Well, if there was any talk about bringing Blake back, the window was there when there was an opening on the Kings coaching staff, possibly. You know, they ultimately hired John Stevens out of the Flyers organization, but, you know, there was some fan discussion about whether Blake would be brought in that, you know, assistant coach position. From all indications, at least from what I hear, it looks like Blake is going to take a job with the San Jose Sharks. But you're right, early in Jack's career, Rob Blake was a mentor. That was one of the reasons that Lombardi signed him. Probably you could most definitely say he overpaid him at $6 million a year in his second tour, you know, here in Los Angeles. But he was paying for more than the numbers, more than the stats. He was paying for, you know, the mentoring. Jack lived with him, like you talked about, and that was really how he learned to be a pro, was through the experiences of Rob Blake. And for all that gets said about Blake and whether his numbers should be retired in Los Angeles and the arguments and disagreements between fans that are pro-Blake and against Blake for the different things that happened here, like him resigning the captaincy and, you know, forcing a trade or being traded or whatever your position is, one thing can't be argued. Rob Blake is a Hall of Fame defenseman. He's won a Stanley Cup. You know, he's a Norris Trophy winner, et cetera, et cetera. So you can't argue with Blake's credentials, and virtually every teammate that you ever talk to will tell you that he was one of the best teammates that guys ever played with. And from that standpoint, you'd like to think that, you know, he was a real positive influence on Jack Johnson when he was first breaking into the NHL.
Moving, I want to really quickly, Rob Scuderi. I think after two seasons in a row of watching the Pittsburgh Penguins in the finals, I think most people here are pretty familiar with Rob Scuderi. But talk about Rob Scuderi's first year in L.A. and the impact that he had on that defense.
Yeah, Rob Scuderi is one of those guys that the less you hear his name, probably the better he's doing. His job is not to be out there in front on the power play and putting up big offensive numbers. He's going to block shots for you. He's a stay-at-home defenseman. He's a guy that does those things that don't get a lot of glory. And Lombardi was criticized a little bit when he signed him. You know, people were saying that he overpaid to get him. He signed him to a big deal, but that's how he was able to get him to come to Los Angeles. L.A. doesn't have a history of winning. They were coming off of a long stretch of not making the playoffs, and signing Rob Scuderi at the time that he did versus trying to sign somebody of that caliber now is a different story. And in the summer or two summers from now, when hopefully the Kings have made some more noise in the playoffs, it'll be even easier to sign those type of players. But Rob Scuderi, absolutely no complaints from the Kings players or Kings fans in terms of what he brought on a night-in, night-out basis. He did his job, and he did it very well, and he'll do it again this year, probably for another 82 games.
Okay, two guys that, you know, have been, you know, third and fourth line guys that I believe, anyway, from watching the Los Angeles Kings play, are about to become a major part of this Kings offense. Guy that we just mentioned, Wayne Simmonds, a big kid, can really a deceptively strong skater, very quick, gets up and down the ice really well, a hoss, can get in people's way, much like Dustin Brown, likes to run guys over, but is developing his offense, 16 goals last year. And then also Brad Richardson. Interesting in the fact that, you know, only 27 points last year, but most of that, as we said, third and fourth line, a little bit, you know, versatility, can play center or the wing. Talk about those guys a little bit and what you expect to see for them going forward.
Yeah, Wayne Simmonds is a great story, right? Here's a kid who came in to camp and basically forced his way onto the team. The Kings didn't expect him to make the team, but Wayne Simmonds came into Los Angeles, and he wanted to play in the National Hockey League, and he did everything that was asked of him, made sure that the coaching staff understood the type of player that he was. And he's had, you know, a phenomenal time here in L.A., and he's only getting better. He's extremely young, and as he continues to fill out and get stronger. The question for Wayne Simmonds is, what's his ceiling? You know, is he a top six forward? Just a few weeks ago, I spoke with Dave Torrey, who's the general manager of the Sioux Greyhounds, a team that Simmonds played for. And Dave Torrey, his former GM, absolutely believes he's a top six forward in the NHL. Torrey was a big believer in Wayne Simmonds. He actually traded it was in a 3-for-1 deal to get Simmonds at the OHL trading deadline. So he only really played a handful of games for the Greyhounds because the following training camp, he ended up sticking with the Kings. And Torrey says that Simmonds is the type of guy that the deeper you get in the playoffs, the more the team and fans will love him. And I think that the Kings saw that as the season wore on last year. Wayne Simmonds is a real versatile player. When there were the injuries, like you mentioned, to Justin Williams in December, Simmonds jumped up there, played some minutes on the top line, more than you know, was able to hang with those guys. Is he a top line, you know, player at this point? No. But could he move up from the third line to the second line? You know, yeah, it's possible. Perfect transition. One of the guys he would be battling for those second line minutes would be Brad Richardson. Richardson's a great story. You know, here's a guy that when he was in junior hockey, he played at Owen Sound, and in, I think it was 2004-05, he actually put up more points than his teammate, Bobby Ryan. Bobby Ryan certainly has received a lot more publicity, you know, in the National Hockey League than Brad Richardson. I'm sure if you took a poll of people around the league, more guys by a wide margin would know who Bobby Ryan is than Brad Richardson. But, you know, Richardson put up 41 goals, and I think he was 99 or 100 points when he was there in Owen Sound. So this is a guy that knows how to find the back of the net and set up other players. And like you talked about, he can play center, he can play wing. He really seemed to have a breakout year last year. And one of the very interesting stories, one of the many interesting stories as we get ready for camp here in a week or two, but Brad Richardson appears to have a bright future, and he and Wayne Simmons are two different type of players, but they will be battling for those top 6 minutes this year in Los Angeles.
Anze Kopitar. big fan of Anze Kopitar and his skills and what he brings to the Kings, but it's interesting. 3 years in a row now, you know, he's led the Kings in scoring. Had a decent playoff, not an outstanding playoff in the six games against Vancouver, but he was a factor. Is this, you know, is Anze Kopitar ready to handle this? Is he a guy? Is that makeup that he has? Is he ready to lead a team like, say, a Jonathan Toews is in Chicago, or a Mike Richards in Philadelphia? Is he ready to do that? Is he capable of doing that? Or will he even be asked to do that?
Well, it depends what type of leadership you're looking for. If you're talking about, you know, ultimately him being the captain of the team and that sort of thing, I just don't see it. That's not a knock on Kopitar at all. He's a phenomenal player, and we'll talk about offense in a second. But this is Dustin Brown's team. Dustin Brown, through and through, is a Los Angeles King. Dean Lombardi talked about he wanted to find a player that was willing to get the Kings logo tattooed on his ass, and if there ever was a player in recent memory that is that player, it's Dustin Brown. So this is his team. The players understand that. You know, I think certainly the fans understand it. But what does Kopitar bring? And is he the number one center? Absolutely, he's your top line guy. Brown's not going to play on the top line very much. Kopitar is. In my opinion, what you saw with Kopitar this year is you saw a young player that was given the opportunity to play with experienced veterans and how his game changed. When you're a young player and you come into the league and you're playing with other young players, you play a different type of game because you don't know any better. Regardless of what the coaches teach you, you gain through experience. And you saw a different Kopitar when he was playing with Ryan Smith and Justin Williams. The first half of the season, like I said earlier, there probably wasn't a better line in hockey. They were absolutely on fire. Unfortunately, they were derailed a little bit by injuries. But Kopitar should have another big season this year. He continued his off-season workouts. He was challenged by Dean Lombardi and the coaching staff prior to last season to, you know, get his body in shape and become a professional off the ice. And from all indications, Kopitar has continued that back home this year, and you know, I think that everybody in Los Angeles, both fans and the organization, as well as his teammates, are expecting Kopitar to step it up even more this year and have another big year, especially if his line mates are healthy.
The progression of Dustin Brown from a young player just you know, gaining experience in the league to becoming the captain of a National Hockey League club is very interesting. This is a guy, Dustin Brown, who in his young days in an LA Kings dressing room was consistently tormented by, you know, a little jerk named Sean Avery. Because I don't know how many people know this, but Dustin Brown had, you know, speech issues that he's since worked out. He had a bit of a stutter, and maybe there's more to that. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, talk about Dustin Brown and how he's grown both on and off the ice to, true on the verge of superstar status in the league.
Yeah, you know, Dustin Brown certainly was a quiet kid when he came to L.A. And there are a couple of key stories, I think, in the development of Dustin Brown that shouldn't go unnoticed. And one is that Brown talks about he thinks the best thing that happened you know, relative to the lockout that happened in 2004 was that he went to the American Hockey League and he played in Manchester, and he said that's where he learned how to become a professional hockey player. And he looks back very proudly upon his time in Manchester, and that was the start and the development and the coming out party for Dustin Brown. He played with a lot of the guys that would end up being the core for the next couple of years in Los Angeles. He played with Camilleri and some of the other guys. And then, you know, you fast forward a couple of years, and there was a key moment in the season last year after a game. We're on a plane ride home. He and Matt Green, we talked earlier about the leadership that Matt Green brings. Green and Brown were sitting on the plane on the way home, and they just really said, this team needs to toughen up. We need to get this team together, and we need to become a team. And they laid out a plan about how they were going to bring the guys together in the off season. This is last summer, a year ago, for workouts. And, you know, they were really going to take charge of the team. And that is really when this team came together. And Dustin Brown talked about that at an event called Hockey Fest that the Kings threw for their fans in late August of last year. And when Dustin Brown stood up in front of the entire Kings organization, all the players were there, alumni was there, the fans were there. When he told the story and talked about the type of leader that he's trying to become and more or less answered the critics that say, is he, you know, captain material, it was a real moving moment. And everybody, anybody that you talked to that was there, was absolutely completely impressed with Dustin Brown and his leadership of the Los Angeles Kings. And sure enough, you know, look at the season that they had. I mean, it's not all dependent upon their off-season workouts, of course, but it just goes to show that he really has grown into that role and, you know, backs up what I said a moment ago. This is Dustin Brown's team, and he'll be the first guy to receive the Stanley Cup, you know, when Gary Bettman passes it to him one day.
Before we start talking about, you know, how we see the Kings ultimately shaking out this year, two more guys I want to talk about, prospects that are among two of the standout prospects in the Kings system that we may or may not see this year. Number one, probably a year away, but Luke Shen's brother, Braden Shen, who's actually a forward, a centerman with the Brandon Wheat Kings, and also a kid who had a year basically taken away from him because of a shoulder injury, Andrei Tyonov. I mean, where are those two kids standing at right now? And I know that I was reading in the Hockey News that at least the Hockey News believes that Tyonov is, you know, has a great chance of making this team out of camp. But where do we what we can look for from Shen and Tyonov?
Yeah, Tyonov, you know, he has a shot certainly of making the team. He, in my opinion, you'll probably see him back in Manchester. That's just a guess. You know, and it's always too early or it's too easy to make those kind of statements before training camp opens, because even though training camp is a couple of weeks long and you're talking about a handful of games, you know, every year it seems there's one or two guys in every organization around the league that just come out of nowhere and impress everybody. So Lakhdianov certainly has a shot. He's another guy that Dean Lombardi a few years ago kind of called out for his attitude, but in this case, he was very impressed. He was very impressed with the way that Lakhdianov hated losing, and Dean likes to see that. He loves to see guys that don't like to lose, you know. It's one thing to love to win. It's another thing to hate to lose, and so that's something, you know, from a character perspective that works in his favor.
He reminds me of a young Sergei Nemchinov. He's got that kind of a build. He's a good skater back and forth, but I see him more, as far as Russians, you don't see too many wall players, but the times that I've seen him, he's been impressive along the wall.
Yeah, and actually he's looked impressive in the few camps that he's been here, over the last couple summers for those sorts of reasons. So we'll see in camp how he's rebounded from the injury and if he's ready to go to take that next step. It is a step up, and we'll see if he's ready. Another guy you mentioned there in terms of is he ready, Braden Shen, obviously strong year last year played for Canada at the World Juniors. He also played with the Brandon Wheat Kings, you know, who were in the Memorial Cup as well. He put up close to 100 points. Big question mark, it's funny. I've polled a number of people this summer about what happens with Shen, and I'd say it's a real split, about 50-50. 50% of the people think that he's the number two center, and the other 50%, which happens to be who I agree with, think that he's probably a year away. You're asking a lot for a kid that age to be your number two center, and this goes back to the problem we talked about earlier, depth in the Kings organization and where he fits in. If the, you know, Kopitar's your number one center, if the Kings had a legitimate number two center and the number three spot was open, Braden Schenn would probably make this team. As it sits right now, barring a trade, you have Stoll, you have Hanzus, you also have Richardson. Where does a guy like Schenn fit? Because you just don't like to put a kid that young in such a pressure situation. If this was 3-4 years ago, where the Kings weren't necessarily expected to make the playoffs, they weren't coming off a 100-point season, then you can afford to put a kid in that situation. But, you know, there's going to be a lot of pressure and a lot of expectations on the Kings this year, and Braden Schenn would probably be better served, at least in my opinion, to go back to play one more year before he, makes it here in Los Angeles. Plus, you're going to have Hanzus coming off the books and that sort of thing. So it's a more natural fit for him to make the team, I think, next summer versus this summer.
Yeah, I think it's the one thing that the Kings have to worry about, obviously, aside from injury, is that, I think you're asking a bit too much. Michael Hanzus is a nice third-line center, but so is Jarrett Stoll.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the thing that the Kings are going to be looking out for. And I think as the season progresses, it's not going to be a concern during the season, I think, as long as Kopitar is healthy and your big guns are healthy. But as you look down towards playoffs, it's going to be a situation where I think Dean Lombardi, is urged to maybe fill that second hole with someone a little bit more capable. And maybe perhaps you see Hanzus playing on the wing or centering your fourth line to give the Kings the kind of depth that they're going to need to hang with the Red Wings, the Blackhawks, the Sharks, and presumably the Canucks in the playoffs.
Yeah, he's probably shored up the defense with the signing of Willie Mitchell and some of the other guys that are already there, like we talked about. You have Matt Green, you have Scuderi, you have Jack, and you have Doughty. So defense, every team likes to acquire a defenseman for depth purposes at the trading deadline, so maybe they get a depth defenseman. But in terms of a big splash that you would think the Kings would make this year, you certainly would think that it would be, a top six forward, which they still have really yet to acquire, and to be determined on when that's going to be acquired. Is there going to be a deal that's made here right as camp opens up? We've seen that happen before. Or is it a situation where he's going to let this team play through it for a month or two, possibly all the way up to the trading deadline? To be determined.
All right, before we wrap up, I want to, the Staples Center. I assume that you've been there, quite a few times. I've been in the Staples Center myself on numerous occasions, and it's an odd kind of a place, I think, as far as the atmosphere. And I guess my question for you is, because I've been in there, and it's been less than a sellout, and we're talking about not last year, but the 2 years before. And then I've been in there when it's a raucous crowd filled. What, for lack of a better way of saying it, what gets Los Angeles Kings fans off these days? What's the temperature of the fans I've been there, and there's a lot of very intelligent fans that are there, but, what's the temperature? How do you gauge the Kings fans going into this all-important season?
Yeah, L.A. Kings fans probably haven't been this excited, quite honestly, since about the 1994 season, coming out of the Cup Finals in 93. And for a lot of good reason. It's not just because the Kings made it back to the playoffs for the first time in 7 or 8 years. It's that when you look around the team and you look at the depth that's in this organization, all the players we've been talking about so far over the last hour or so, this team is ready. This team is on the verge of something, and the rest of the NHL has noticed. They're being, compared to the Blackhawks of a couple of years ago, is one of the, big stories floating around the league in the last 6 months or so. But people are starting to notice, and when people outside of Los Angeles start to notice, that just gets the people inside of Los Angeles and around Los Angeles even more excited. In terms of the building, when the building first opened, for the first couple of years, the Kings had some exciting playoff runs. They had some epic battles against, the Colorado Avalanche after Rob Blake was traded there, and they upset the Detroit Red Wings in that famous series there. So there was a lot of excitement inside of Staples Center, but it was a different building. The Forum was one of the older buildings, the smaller building, with just two levels, but it really was just one big level, one big bowl, if you will, where Staples has a lower bowl, and then it's the only building in the league that has three levels of suites before you get to the top level. So it's a very tall building. But that building is loud. Make no mistake about it, that when that building is sold out, that building is extremely loud. Whether you're talking about a big regular season game, it was pretty loud this year when the Capitals came to town right after the first of the year, and the Kings ended up beating Ovechkin and the Capitals. There was the Boston game where the two U.S. hockey goaltenders were battling. But you also were talking about the playoffs against Vancouver. I don't believe that I've ever heard that building as loud as it was for Game 3 against Vancouver in the first round of the playoffs this year, and that includes how loud that building was back when it first opened 10 years ago and they were playing the Colorados and, you know, Detroit's in the playoffs. That place was pretty loud just a few months ago. And so when opening night rolls around, even though they'll be playing the Atlanta Thrashers, not a team that Kings fans usually get up for, I expect Staples Center to be rocking come October, here in a few weeks.
I mean, is that what Kings fans really, you know, get excited for? Is it the marquee matchups more so even than the rivalry of, say, Phoenix or San Jose? I mean, obviously San Jose would be a big game. The Ducks, I mean, especially not this coming season, it doesn't appear that that's going to be a big matchup. But is that what gets Kings fans excited more, you know, the big cities, the big, you know, the big teams coming in more so than even their divisional rivals?
Well, you know, again, it goes back to playoff matchups, really. I mean, when you go back to the early 90s, when was the Forum rocking? The Forum was rocking when the Kings were playing the Edmonton Oilers, the Calgary Flames, you know, teams that they had epic battles with in the playoffs and that they developed a real hatred for. And as the years went by, those rivalries fell by the wayside. The Oilers, in terms of a rival, don't mean anything to the new fans in Los Angeles nowadays. There's just not that rivalry. And it's not just because Gretzky's retired and Gretzky's gone. There was still a rivalry that existed there because of the hatred in the early 90s. So then you look at, well, who you know, after alignment and after expansion, who did the Kings look to as their rivals? And it was, like we just talked about, it was the Detroit Red Wings and the Colorado Avalanche. When Rob Blake went there, that created an instant rivalry with the Avalanche. And so, you know, as the Kings didn't make the playoffs over the last 7 or 8 years, the place is still packed for the Red Wings games, but unfortunately there probably are more Red Wings fans, at least in terms of making noise. I'm sure in terms of numbers there aren't more of them in the building, but they've been pretty loud over the last couple years. But inside the division, not as big of a rivalry with Phoenix, not as big of a rivalry with the Dallas Stars. But Anaheim, regardless of the records of those two teams at any particular point, it's always a big game. And San Jose, I just don't think that people that live outside of the state of California understand how much NoCal and SoCal hates each other. I don't know if it goes back to the Dodgers and the Giants or what it goes back to, you know, we take their water or what the issue is, but people from Southern California, you know, on balance, don't really like Northern California people and vice versa. So it's always a great rivalry in sports. And when the San Jose Sharks play the LA Kings, it's a great crowd at Staples, and it's a lively event. And fortunately, the games have been pretty exciting and pretty fun over the last couple years too. So that hasn't hurt.
All right. So you know, without getting too specific, you know, the Kings, like we said, it's going to be a chore. I don't think it's any given that the Kings are going to be able to duplicate or do better than the season that they had last year. But looking ahead to the season, everything, I mean, we didn't even mention Ryan Smith, the veteran left winger on this team, but I mean, where do you see the Kings and how do you see this season shaping up for Los Angeles?
Yeah, you know, overall, when you look at the Western Conference, there have not been as many changes in the West as there were, say, out in the East. So, you know, where can you expect different teams to fall? The top five teams, the top six teams, you know, including Los Angeles, will probably all be right there. The Pacific, excuse me, at some point the Kings are going to challenge San Jose, you know, to become the top team in the Pacific Division. And they were there at Christmas time of last year. San Jose came in strong in the second half of the year and ultimately won the Pacific Division like they have for the last couple years. San Jose looked right for the taking earlier in the summer, and then they just went out and signed, you know, Niemi, and what does that do for them in goal? like we talked about quite a while ago here in this conversation, Dean Lombardi has said that in order for this team to get better, each player, especially the younger players, have to get better. And the majority of those guys, Dustin Brown, Kopitar, Doughty, Simmons, Jonathan Quick, they all took a step forward last year. If they take another step, or even if a portion of those guys take another step forward this year, without any trades, without any additions, this is absolutely a team that can challenge for a top spot in the Western Conference, including winning the Pacific Division. So that brings a lot of excitement to Los Angeles. On the flip side, if key players get hurt, like they did last year, Ryan Smith missed time, Justin Williams missed time. If key players get hurt on the offensive side, there probably isn't as much depth in the organization as there would be on the defensive side, where there are some high-end young prospects, and then certainly in goal, where they appear to be set for quite a while with Jonathan Quick and Bernier. So that would be the concern coming into the season.
All right, Mayor. Thanks. I mean, we've been at this for about an hour, so thank you very, very much for joining us.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate it.
Again, it's mayorsmanor.com, and we'll put the link up on the website. And it's been a fantastic hour, and we'll do this again.
Yeah, when the Kings and Blackhawks hook up later in the year, let's get back together and talk hockey.
And maybe we'll even talk pro wrestling. On your site, if everybody goes to it, mayorsmanor.com, there's a pro wrestling reference article that was posted last week, including a mention of one Rock and Roll Buck Zumoff for you Minnesota and AWA wrestling fans. So there you go.
There you go. Have a great week.
All right, thanks a lot.
Talk to you later.
All right. All right, superstar.
I'm here.
That was fun. Yeah, I wanted to have the mayor on because L.A. Kings, and I was talking to him about it through email. I really see this season, at least looking at it, at this stage, I could very well see the Blackhawks in a situation where they're either the fourth or the fifth seed in the opening round. They're facing the LA Kings, and that would be a dangerous draw. It was a dangerous draw last year, had it have happened. I thought the Blackhawks were actually pretty lucky to end up with the Nashville Predators. I think it was a bit of a letdown for them, and we saw that early on in that series with the Predators, but. Yeah, that would be really, really exciting. I think great for hockey if the Blackhawks and the Kings were to meet in the playoffs this upcoming season.
Well, you and I talked last year going into the playoffs how a lot of those teams out west were really bad matchups for the Hawks. They obviously didn't play well. My memory recalls against Dallas, Anaheim, or L.A.,
Well, no. Dallas, the Blackhawks finally got over that kind of in history. The Blackhawks, especially in Dallas, have played a lot of crazy games, and they haven't had the. It's funny because when they go to Dallas, it seems like they play these crazy 7-5 games, and then in the United Center, they end up, it's like 2-1, 3-2 hockey games. But they finally got over that Dallas hump. And Dallas was an inconsistent and a bad team at times last year. They didn't really do anything. They've got ownership issues. They really didn't do anything to get any better. I mean, their two off-season acquisitions were Andrew Raycroft and Adam Burrish. So it says all you need to know there. I really like L.A. this year. But, they're starting off, obviously, as the mayor told us, with the Matt Green injury, which is big. That's a big injury, but... With Willie Mitchell there, if he can stay healthy, that'll help that out. But that's, as far as moving the puck, Jack Johnson and Drew Doughty, then they have two big physical defensemen that'll cause a lot of teams a lot of problems with Willie Mitchell and Matt Green. Scuderi is a jack-of-all-trades, defensive-minded defenseman. And then your sixth guy, whether it ends up being Thomas Hickey or Peter Harold or Alec Martinez, That's a good solid defense. They should be okay in net with Quick and Bernier, and even if Ehresburg will probably still be around, unless they don't want him taking up minutes in the AHL. But I mean, depth is a concern with any team in the league now, just because you really can't afford to keep too many guys around as far as depth, and your third and your fourth line guys are slotted in at certain prices. And I mean, it's just like the Blackhawks. If injuries happen to Kane and Taves, the season's pretty much in jeopardy, because then you've got Fernando Pisani, Victor Stahlberg, Jack Skilly, you know, maybe even Jeff Tate coming up and getting discernible minutes, and that's never good. All right. I should talk about last week real quick. I want to thank once again Scott Norton for those that were looking for either on iTunes or the website or anything, looking for last week's show. Ironically, our a milestone show, our 50th show, ended up being a audio disaster. And I tried twice this past week for about a total of 5 hours. I tried to fix the audio file, and it's actually listenable, but and I would listen to it, but I wouldn't ask anybody else to listen to it, and I'd be insulted if somebody asked me to listen to it. So basically what I'm going to go back and do, and Scott was a great guest. He was on with us for about a half an hour. For those of you that were with us live and heard it, at least tried to hear it. So I'm going to go back and transcribe the interview with him, and maybe I'll continue to try to clear it up so it's we can put it up in the archives. But that's what happened to last week's show. It was there. Basically what happened is as we were going live, my switchboard went down, and I couldn't call in on Skype for whatever reason, so I aborted and called in on a landline. And while we were doing the show, I realized that I was slow, but I didn't realize the, ironically, a landline was causing distortion and feedback. I didn't realize any of that, so there was all kinds of things going on. And then the second half of the show, when I actually called in my proper audio setup, we were way loud. We were really loud. So I don't know. I just chalk it up to another experience here at the Third and In Radio.
Well, there's one thing we can promise, that's a technology nightmare.
It was fun. I mean, it was a great show. I mean, I've listened to it probably about 8 or 9 times now, trying to fix the show. But it was a great interview, and Scott was a great guest. So I'm going to transcribe that after the show. I'm going to go home and make myself a big bowl of macaroni and cheese, and I'm going to start transcribing that thing and get that up on the website in the next couple of days. Any thoughts from last week's show?
Other than I'm going to work with him and redo my deal with you. No, I thought he was great. I thought he brought a lot of insight that even for a casual or even above a casual fan don't get to know that much about.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that came out of the interview that I did not know, he had some interesting, and again, we'll transcribe it, but he had some interesting insight onto the negotiations, not only with Billy Sweat, as Scott Norton is the agent for Billy Sweat, not only the negotiations with the Blackhawks, but also the negotiations, or maybe you could say lack thereof, with Brian Burke and the Toronto Maple Leafs. That was something that was interesting coming out of that show. And, he's real personable, and he's got, one of the things that he's doing is he's being very proactive and getting his clients, the aforementioned Dustin Brown, and the mayor also mentioned Corey Elkins, who's a client of Norton Sports Management. He's getting all these guys on Twitter and getting them to interact with fans online, which is an interesting thing. And he had also some great thoughts about the NHL's or lack thereof use of the internet hockey community in ways that maybe they could utilize. Shows like this or websites that are out there that they're actually currently running away from. So we'll get that up on the site, and so it wasn't a complete waste of Scott's time.
I mean, forget our time. I mean, that's you know, that's doable. We don't want to waste other people's time.
The only really news going on right now, this coming weekend, but the next time we will talk to everybody, the Blackhawks will have actually completed, or they'll be, actually, they are playing next week, one game. But, the Blackhawks prospects are competing in the Toronto Maple Leafs annual rookie tournament. This coming weekend, Saturday, September 11th, in London, Ontario, the Blackhawks prospects will be taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs prospects, the Senators, and the Pittsburgh Penguins prospects in a round-robin tournament. Kyle Beach, Sean Lalonde, Jeremy Morin are among those that are expected to be there. I don't really know. In years past, the NHL Network has aired some of these games on a tape delay basis. I'm not sure, and I'm sure someone will, as soon as they hear me say this, will correct me if I'm wrong. But I'm not really sure what the NHL Network's plans are to broadcast anything. I'm sure something will come up. Maybe it won't involve the Blackhawks, or, I mean, probably should. But Leafs TV is there recording all these games, so I'm sure eventually they'll show up on the NHL Network. This week, the NHL Network is re-airing the Blackhawks-Vancouver series from this past May, so check that out. And the only other news going on is several people today got promotions. Did you see the superstar?
I did not.
Jay Blunk, Stan Bowman, Kevin Cheveldayoff, Al McIsaac, all got promotions today. They got new titles. They're all basically ascended to vice presidents of, Stan Bowman now, he's not just the general manager, he's the vice president and general manager, Jay Blunk. Essentially, it's a bunch of guys getting rewarded for a job that the previous regime did, with the exception of Jay Blunk. Jay Blunk's actually been, he's done a lot of great legwork for the Blackhawks and John McDonough since he came over from the Cubs. But, Al McIsaac is, he's basically a professional ass kisser, and now he's a professional ass kisser with a fancier title.
Hey, every company needs one.
Yeah, allegedly a professional ass kisser. Don't even know the guy. Wouldn't know. Just only secondhand information. All right. If I can find it. Remember that we were doing emails at the end of last week's show, and because I'm looking for it here, forgive me as I fumble through paper. I know our readers love it when I fumble through paper, or our listeners, whatever. Oh, here. Remember the Victor Stahlberg question last week?
Yeah.
Okay, we might as well revisit it in the few minutes that we have left here. I should mention that if you go to thethirdmanin.com right now, we have a couple polls, one that I'll have to take down tonight because it's been up there forever, and I think people are annoyed by it. Who most deserves the next Blackhawks Heritage Night? We've yet to hear about who's going to be welcomed to the United Center and being honored with these quote-unquote Heritage Nights this year. We have some options up on the website. Al Secord, Cliff Coral, Dennis Hull, Eric Nesterenko, Murray Bannerman, or other, and I gave a few suggestions, Ivan Boldarev, Eric Daze, Tom Lazziak, Grant Mulvey, or Phil Russell. Have you any idea who you would vote for there, Susar? Who did you vote for?
I did not vote, but I think if I did, I would have to go with Al Secord.
48.9% of people agreed with you. 85 people voted for Al Secord. Second place, Dennis Hull, with 20.7% of the vote. I'm a little bit surprised by this, but if you really go back and look at Murray Bannerman's career, and we didn't get into this with Steve Ludzik a couple of weeks ago, but it's a different era, but Murray Bannerman is, if it wasn't for the call, Pat Foley's call of Bannerman, I don't know how, revered Murray Bannerman or how well thought of he'd be. He was an average goaltender. But Murray Bannerman, 10.3. Other got 7.5% of the vote. Cliff Coral, and I think this, he deserves more respect than this. 462 career points in 814 games, and good, really good player. Cliff Coral with a 6.3, and Eric Nesterenko likewise with 6.3% of the vote. Also, the current poll going up there right now. Which new Blackhawks will make the biggest impact this upcoming season? Your options were Fernando Pisani, Jack Skilly, John Scott, Kyle Beach, Marty Turco, or Victor Stahlberg. And currently Marty Turco is leading with 53.3% of the vote. On to, well, actually the second guy is Victor Stahlberg, and that would be an excellent segue here. This is from Carl. Chris, I think you're being a little harsh on Victor Stahlberg. He's a big guy who skates hard and fast and has a good shot. Just the kind of guy who will succeed under Joe Quenneville's system. He won't be the next Marian Hossa, but he can be a guy who scores 25 and excels in a spot on the second power play unit. Just because he's a big guy doesn't mean he has to be a rough and tumble guy. Dustin Byfuglien, a favorite of yours, was never a mean or nasty player here. Byfuglien never scored 20 goals with the Hawks, and he probably won't in Atlanta either. This is Carl talking. I can safely say, for $850,000, I'll take Stahlberg over Byfuglien any day, and we'll probably get similar or more production from the Swedish kid. Yours truly, Carl. What do you think about that, Superstar?
Like I said last week, I think he's right. I think you're going to get more production out of him. I know you brought up a very good point about the contact. If he's going to be willing to deal with a lot of that that Dustin Byfuglien was able and willing to do, 20 to 25 goals sounds about right.
Yeah, I think 20 to 25 goals, depending on who he plays with. I mean, if there's an injury to Brouwer or, if Kyle Beach doesn't make the team and just doesn't come around ever, Stahlberg will get minutes that I don't think that they have him pegged for right now. I mean, Brouwer's going to be on that top line unless he plays his way off again. Stahlberg has to play with good players, but I think that they're probably leaning towards having him on the Bolin line, at least at first, to give that line some speed. You know, I mean, you'd expect Bolin to play with Stahlberg, and outside of Kyle Beach having an excellent camp, maybe Brouwer ends up on that line, but Stahlberg, Bolin, and either Skilly or Kopechki. I don't really see how else that would shake out. But yeah, I mean, if Bolin's going to center the third line all year long, then you're going to want a guy with some speed, a guy that he can dish to and give that line a little bit of a dynamic element. So Stahlberg probably ends up on that line. I don't see Dave Bolin setting Stahlberg up for 20 to 25 goals. I'm sorry, I don't believe in that. And this is, in a hit-or-be-hit league, it remains to be seen whether or not Victor Stahlberg is going to be willing to put up with that kind of physical, that kind of physical play. It's not just skating and finishing your check. It's also being willing to carry the puck long enough to get hit, to take a guy out of the play. I mean, that's one of the things that when you're running around, and one of the reasons why the Blackhawks, if you go back and watch these games, the Blackhawks don't run around a whole heck of a lot, and that's because that they're concentrating on their defensive responsibilities. So you're constantly in the play. You're taking away passing lanes. You pick your spots when you're physical. But that's as you're carrying the puck. I mean, one of the things that you have to do is draw a defender to you, and you got to be willing to hold on to that puck long enough to draw the guy in for the hit. Maybe you can avoid the hit, or you get rid of it just enough of the time where the guy's worried that he'll get a penalty for taking too many strides, but you have to be willing to do that. And if Victor Stahlberg's not willing to do that, he's not going to play. I just don't see Joe Quenneville allowing Stahlberg to set that kind of precedent on this team. For all the things that I would say about Jack Skilly, I think Jack Skilly is willing to do that. For maybe one of the reasons that I don't think Jack Skilly sees it coming half the time. But, at least he's willing to do it. But Should be interesting. Another thing that happened, we talked about it a little bit, Antti Niemi going to San Jose. What do you think?
You know, I was asked a lot this past week about that because of the $2 million price tag. You know, why could we get things done for 2 years? Why do we have to get to this? Why do we have to lose him? You know, like you said, I think it's a good move for him. He's going to a contender. He's not going to be handed anything out there. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Does that move make the Sharks that much better? Obviously, it's Nabokov, you could say it's an upgrade. But is that the move that's going to help them beat the Hawks in the playoffs?
Well, first and foremost, Evgeny Nabokov, for, you know, all of his faults in the postseason and in international play, most recently, he's one of, I mean, he's right up there in the top three as far as regular season play. I mean, there's probably Ryan Miller, the season that Brzgalov had last year. I mean, you could count on one hand the goaltenders' history that put up the kind of regular season numbers that Evgeny Nabokov can put up. That's something that you have to consider. The Sharks in the regular season have in part been carried by Nabokov. So I don't think that you can, we're talking about the LA Kings tonight. I don't think that you can just say that the Sharks are going to be atop the conference again and repeat there in the Pacific Division. I don't think that there's a guarantee at all. I've said that I've come around on Niemi based on the, how strong and how unflappable he was in the postseason. But he still hasn't been in any. Him and Nidamaki, make no mistake about it, him and Nidamaki are going in there on an even slate, and they're going to fight it out for that starting job. I think Niemi would start out as the favorite, you know, and rightfully so. But they're gonna fight it out. I think it's a healthy situation for San Jose. But you know, I think for everybody that's one of the things that really bothers me is the negativity towards Bill Zito about this. Is that and Antti Niemi. You know, the fact of the matter is Bill Zito and Antti Niemi, Bill Zito primarily, did screw up in that they did not realize. And you know what? To be fair, I would have done it too. If I was Bill Zito, I probably would have played the same card, because in my mind, and as you know, and most people that we talk to, in my mind, I just didn't believe that the Blackhawks would be willing. Of all the changes that went on in the offseason, I just didn't believe in the back of my mind that they could, that John McDonough would allow this to happen. That the one position that would be the most difficult to explain to fans. And not fans that are listening to this, but the 95% of the rest of the audience that watches the Blackhawks and follows them, is that how do you explain that you're letting your Stanley Cup championship goaltender walk? So I would have probably fallen prey to the same thing that Bill Zito did. And then, okay, I'll take you to arbitration. I'll negotiate with you all the way up to it. But in the end, you'll do, as long as it's reasonable, you'll do what you need to do to keep, you know, your Stanley Cup champion goaltender. And he's not an old goaltender. He's entering, you know, what would be considered the prime years of his career. He's a big kid, again, unflappable, you know, all these great things that you can say about Niemi. You know, is the history or the pedigree there? No, but there's a lot of good indicators there about what he could be. So I probably would fall prey to the same thing, but, you know, after that's over, okay, the Blackhawks let them walk. They bring in Turco. They, you know, they create flexibility for themselves, and they're going to gamble that this aging goaltender who's never won anything is going to be the guy. But in the end, where did Niemi end up? He ended up in the best possible place for him because he's going. I disagree with the 1 year because, again, you're talking about Craig Anderson, Thomas Vokoun, Ilya Brzgalov are going to be his competition in unrestricted free agency next year. And, again, there probably won't be that much money to go around. But as far as a destination, I mean, let me ask you this, Superstar. if the San Jose Sharks don't win it this year, this is Joe Thornton's UFA year, by the way. If the San Jose Sharks don't go to a Stanley Cup final or win a Stanley Cup this year, who do you think is going to be the scapegoat? Is it going to be Antti Niemi or Antero Niemimaki? Or is it going to be Joe Thornton?
Joe Thornton, Doug Wilson.
Doug Wilson for not putting the pieces into place, or Patty Marleau, who's been there forever and never won a thing. Who's going to be the scapegoat? It's going to be those guys. It's not going to be Niemi.
Exactly. It's going to be Joe Thornton, especially for his lack of playoff production, everything we hear about it every spring, and Doug Wilson.
And conversely, if the San Jose Sharks win and Niemi's in net, what variable is different here?
That'd be Antti Niemi.
So, of all of the options left, he probably could have gone somewhere and got more money. But as in the interview that we talked about last week with Scott Norton, you know, sometimes it's not about what you can get in the 1 year. You're playing for the bigger contract, the contract that sets you financially for the rest of your life. And that's what Niemi and Bill Zito are going for here. They're in a spot where they can win. They're confident that Niemi can win that job. And of all the places that they looked at, it's the one place where they think in 1 year they can make the biggest splash, have the biggest impact, go to UFA, and out-muscle Anderson, an aging Vokoun, and who knows how Brizgalov's going to do in Phoenix. I think Brizgalov will end up being moved before the deadline anyway. Maybe signed with whatever team he ends up going to. But that's what they're gambling on here, and I think it's a good gamble. And that's why we said, and I've said in the past, I talked about it on the hockey night last week, that the two places that I thought that were the only options for Niemi were either San Jose or Washington, because those are two teams that are on the verge, and if they win, and Niemi's in net, everyone will look at him outside of, you know, just being just outwardly and obviously average, and the team's still winning, people will look at him as the variable. And even if they don't win, if they just go to a Stanley Cup final and he plays well, he stands to earn, make a lot of money out of this move, to whereas if you sign for 2 or 3 years for $2.5-3 million with the New York Islanders, maybe you're bombarded with shots, the team never gets any better, you're in a bad place, and all of a sudden the rest of the league looks at you like, maybe this guy was carried by the Chicago Blackhawks, not the other way around. You know, you understand what I'm saying? It's like
absolutely.
He and his agent did the right thing. And for people that are criticizing Bill Zito about this move in particular, you can criticize him about misreading the situation with the Blackhawks and the arbitration. Those are fair. But to criticize this move, you're wrong. This was the best move for Bill Zito and Niemi. And now it's up to Niemi to play out this year and win the kind of contract that they had hoped to get here in Chicago. And maybe they will get it in Chicago in the end. You never know. That could play its way out too. But that's the story there, and that's the story for another edition of the Third Man In Radio, Superstar.
Outstanding.
Next week, I don't know who we're going to have on. We will be leading into the Blackhawks reporting for camp. Again, they'll be in the midst of the rookie tournament up there in London, Ontario. But I'm sure we'll get a lot more into the Blackhawks next week. And it's exciting. I'll tell you this, though. I could use another month off.
Oh, we're just getting into the swing of things. And for the record, I am efforting a very special guest.
Oh, well, note that to me when we get off the air.
I'm efforting.
Send me a little message on the phone there and enlighten me. But I could use it, and you know what? And no matter what they say publicly, to a man, the Chicago Blackhawks wish they had another man off another month off.
Well, I think they need another month off just to sober up.
Yeah. I mean, no matter where they're going. I know that Ben Eager finally found his way to these unofficial workouts in Atlanta. I don't think Dustin Byfuglien's there yet. Dustin Byfuglien, I don't know if anybody can find him. He's probably under a bed somewhere. Yeah, this is this first, especially this first month of the season. The Blackhawks get some home cooking as they usually do in October. They need to get off to a quick start because this team's going to hit a wall, I think, if not on that November road trip, right thereafter. You'll be due for a letdown, and this is it can't be overstated just how much it takes out of a team to win a Stanley Cup, and then the excitement of winning it, and you lose focus during the off season about your preparation, both mentally and physically, going into the following year, and it could take this team some time to get back into the swing of things. Whereas there's other teams that are really excited and they're looking for retribution: the Red Wings, the Kings, to a certain extent Vancouver, San Jose. I mean, these teams can't wait for this season to come about, and the Blackhawks could use a little bit more time. So. But we'll talk about that more in the coming weeks. But until then, that was another edition of the Third Man In Radio. Thank you very much, Superstar.
Not a problem. My pleasure as always.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next Monday, September 13th at 8 o'clock here at blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin or simply thethirdmanin.com. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Good night, everybody.